Birch Bark House, Chapter 5, Fishtail's Pipe. Now in the mornings, there was a sharp freshness in the air. Omakias loved this time of the year and jumped from her blankets eagerly, rolled her sleeping mat and fur blanket, and put them away quickly so that she could help rekindle the outdoor cooking fire. Her crow hopped after her. Though it could fly short distances, its wing hadn't yet healed. A dag, the Anishinaabe, or Ojibwa word for crow, was its name. Nokomis was fond of Andag. The bird often rode on her shoulder and kept her company as she packed dry fish, repaired nets, wove new mats, and, alongside Omakias, tanned hides they needed now for winter clothing, jackets, moccasins, mittens, hoods. Omakias used the gun barrel flusher, Day-Day's gift. She didn't like the work any better than she had ever had, but Andag's lively company helped. Andag even frightened off an owl and once perched on the head guard of Baby Niwo's cradle board. Kraka cracked loudly and repeatedly until Mama came running to find a curious raccoon trying to steal from the bundles of dried fish and venison she was preparing to catch. Andag quickly became everybody's favorite, but the crow slept only near Omakias. He fell asleep just at dusk, perching low on a branch she had tied into the side of the ribs of the birch bark house. Day-Day spent a few warm fall days making repairs on his canoe, and then it was time for him to leave again. He would make one more big trip before the cold rains and then the harsh snow slashed down. Once he stopped gathering and selling the furs of other Anishinaabeg, he would go out on his own trapline. For the rest of the late fall and winter, he would be home and gone. Home and gone, and each time he returned, Omakias thought with a sinking stomach he would be hauling back skins for her to work on. One afternoon, his friends and partners came to visit and make their plans. Albert Lapoit and Fishtail came walking through the woods. When Angeline and Omakias saw the men coming, they decided to hide and quickly dived into a heavy stand of bush. Peeking between weedy stalks, they had a good view. Albert was round as a kettle, and his big teeth stuck out pleasantly when he grinned. He fancied himself quite a medicine man, and wore at his throat a circle of bear claws. Next to him walked the tall and handsome Fishtail. He had strikingly long, thick, oiled black hair, and a hawk-thin face with a proud curl to his lips. He carried his pipe in the cradle of his left arm, close to his heart. It was a fancy pipe, made of a piece of sumac wood marked with a sweet grain. Bands along the stem were carefully beaded in black and yellow. Fishtail took extremely good care of his pipe, cleaned it often, prayed with it every sunrise. To him, it was a living thing. The bowl was red pipestone in the shape of an otter's head, his clan. Dark blue pony beads hung down a swatch of fringe, and Fishtail touched them carefully and lovingly as he stepped quietly along. Mikwam came up along the path to meet his friends, and the men talked and joked before they made themselves comfortable, sitting on blankets on the ground. Omakias saw her father open up his leather pouch of sweet kinnikinick and asima, or tobacco. Fishtail lit the pipe, and the fragrance of burning red willow tobacco hung peacefully in the air. Each man, as he drew in the smoke, wore a look of concentrated and peaceful attention. The pipe passed around the circle twice before any of the men said a word. What they said made Omakias and Angeline creep closer, listen more carefully. Hidden in the grasses and underbrush, they breathed quietly and opened their ears to catch the lower tones of the men's voices. "Chimukuman," said Fishtail in a growling tone of indignation. The word meant big knife, and it was used to describe the non-Indian or white people who were traveling in larger numbers than ever to Ojibwa land and settling down their cabins, forts, barns, gardens, pastures, fences, fur trading posts, churches, and mission schools. LaPointe was becoming more Chimikmun every day, and there was talk of sending the Anishinaabeg to the west. "They say we must leave the island," Fishtail went on. No one commented. Curled against itching nettle leaves, Omakias eased her hand to her leg to scratch. She scratched silently and kept listening. "That's right," her father said at last, contempt in his voice. "That's what they are saying, the useless ones." Albert LaPointe drew on the pipe and frowned, tamping and adjusting the tobacco burning in the bowl. He drew deep and puffed hard. He was part French, like Dede, but browner than Fishtail. His eyes were greenish-brown. His round, cheerful face beamed. He sighed, and with a faraway look, said that he had a vision. Fishtail and Dede looked blankly and patiently at him when he said this, for LaPointe was known for recounting visions and dreams that had very little meaning, though they seemed to affect him hugely. Now he looked down sternly, gathering his thoughts. Suddenly he blurted out, "I dreamed I had lice!" In the brush, Angeline and Omakias clapped hands over their mouths to stifle their glee. Dede and Fishtail managed to keep straight faces, but Omakias was sure she saw the corner of Dede's mouth twitch. Albert LaPointe sighed. "The meaning is unclear," he muttered. "Let us find the meaning," said Dede. His voice was serious, but the girls both knew that he was having fun with LaPointe. "Was anything else happening in your dream?" LaPointe frowned, as though overcome with the weight of his vision. "Yes," he said, "we were planting a dance gathering." "Ah," said Father, "the meaning now becomes clear. This was a deep dream indeed." "What?" LaPointe was speechless. "From now on, when you dance," Father said, without allowing the trace of a smile, "you will dance hard enough to shed your lice." "Yes?" LaPointe's voice was suspicious, but neither Dede nor Fishtail led on by any sign that Father's interpretation was a joke. "Perhaps," said LaPointe, "I should tell you my own thoughts." And then to Angeline and Omakias' surprise and dismay, he told the other men that he was thinking of taking his family, all 10 of his children, his uncles and grandmas and grandpas, to a western part where, he had heard, government payments were made. Omakias nudged Angeline. Those children were their friends. To think that they might have to leave? Omakias nearly cried out, but Angeline poked her to be quiet. All of the Ojibwe would be safe on their own land farther west, Albert was saying. No one would bother them. Yes, there were hazards on the way. Dakota war parties, hunger, the threat of winter's dire weather. He'd rather not go. Still, said jolly Albert, he had moved before when the waves of white people lapped his feet. West, always west, said Dede, agreeing slowly. We hear the Chickamauga axe ring in the woods, chopping a tree. We should be gone before the tree falls. We have to stop somewhere someday, Fishtail drew thoughtfully on the pipe, and the fragrant smoke clouded his face. West is where the spirits of the dead walk. If the whites keep chasing us west, we'll end up in the land of the spirits. I have dreamed that's where they want us to go anyway, said Albert. That will please them. They are like greedy children. Nothing will ever please them for long, said Dede. Although his grandfather had been French, he was raised and considered himself Ojibwe and kept the rules of his mother's dodem or clan, the catfish clan, the Awasi. Only in some Chimikmun things, his cabin, for instance, and his ability to play and win the white man's game of chess with the trader, did he take secret pride. Not until they have it all, said Fishtail. All of our lands, our white rice beds, hunting grounds, fishing streams, gardens. Not even when we are gone and they have the bones of our loved ones will they be pleased. I have thought about this. Fishtail put up his hand and held it there, looked keenly at his friends. Before they were born, before they came into this world, The Chickamauga men must have starved as ghosts. They are infinitely hungry. The men smoked with increased intensity, looking deep into the fire as the breeze came up and dusk lowered. Dede was thoughtful and his eyes deep and clouded. Even La Patrie looked serious, the dimples set hard in his cheeks. Watching in the bushes, Omakias and Angeline waited for them to resume their talking. But that day, mulling over Fishtail's difficult words, perhaps, the men kept their silence.